This call is now being recorded.
Hello?
Hello.
Okay, I think that's a little better. I have the headset on. Don't know what happens, but it's better with the headset. So,
okay.
Can you hear me? Okay. So, I will edit whatever in this particular interview that we don't need. Or we may just keep it all. I don't know. I kind of want this thing to be really informal. But I want to go ahead and get into one of the reasons that I wanted to interview you for this this number three of my podcast series. And I know that you've heard, as well as the rest of us have heard, about different stories. But this one in particular happened last week at one of the Lakers games with one of the fans. So this lady and her friend threw a drink at some people in the stands at the Lakers game that were either kneeling or about to kneel or in the process of kneeling. I'm not really sure. And certain news outlets are not real sure about exactly what was going on. But the drink was thrown on them because this particular lady and her friend were thinking that, you know, they were disrespecting the flag. As a matter of fact, they bragged about it, and they shared the video and tweeted, take a knee for the land of the slaves, disrespect the flag and our country, and this is how we'll react. So the drink, throwing of the drink on the fans, I guess, was her way of showing them that this is what's going to happen if you all continue to kneel at our games. So, you know, but the thing that, I'm not even surprised about this stuff, but the thing that, for some reason, that struck me very quickly was, and came in very quickly was, wow, I wonder if she has any children. And I don't know why I thought that. I just, you know, I can just imagine, it's hard for me to imagine conversations going on in households, you know, without children being present. If you're not disciplined enough to go to a basketball game and mind your business and watch the game, if you're not disciplined enough to not throw a drink on a stranger, on another fan, then I don't think you have the discipline to have those conversations at home without, you know, children being present. So here's my question. As an educator, as a Houston educator, someone who's taught all ages of children, all hues, all races of children, my question to you, now my children are both educators, and of course I've talked to them about this subject, and so I know where they stand on that. But in an attempt not to appear biased and be biased by what my children think about these type of things, I wanted to talk to someone else, you namely, and for a lot of good reasons. But my question to you is, as an educator, how do you handle and teach children who come from these types of environments and these types of households? And do educators have an impact on what children coming from these types of environments and these types of households, you have some kind of an impact on them? You know, educators spend more waking hours with you than their parents do. And so you all have a great influence on them. You all get a chance to really see who they really are. Can you tell me a little bit about a classroom setting when children who come from households like that, when children, you know, come to the classroom setting and exposed to other children from all different nationalities and cultures?
Yes, actually, I can tell you. I mean, I have stories. You know, it's one thing about being an educator. We get to see so much. And the thing about children, our children are honest to a fault. It's like they're not trying to truly reveal what's going on at home. Sometimes they're trying to keep those things concealed. But they emulate what they see. So if there's a parent at home that's exhibiting racist behavior and they're using racist jargon, you know, it's going to spill over into the children because children emulate. They emulate what they see. So a lot of times they come to school and they say these things, and then as an educator, I have to intervene. I've had issues where I've had to break up fights. I've had to, and that would be my teaching moment where they say something and they don't realize that it's wrong. Or now I can just say just in recent years, I've had issues where I have one member of one particular race is saying stereotypical things about another race, specifically black people, I would say. And they're just saying stereotypical things to be funny. And a lot of the black kids that are in class, they're kind of laughing it off because they don't really know that they should be offended. They don't know right. until it's later. And then I have right. to be the one that I have to interject, and then I have to teach the whole class. And then I have to teach the black kids why you should be offended. And I have to teach that member of that particular race, whether they're white or, you know, Hispanic or Asian, why you can't say things like that. Because every yeah. setting is not safe. School is meant to be a safe setting. The world, once you walk out of those doors, it's not that safe. I can't promise you that, you know, the next person you say something stereotypical to is just going to laugh about it. They might right. not. That could be you getting into a fight. That could be the end of your life. You know, you have to be careful what you say. The tongue speaks volumes.
Right. I can't help but wonder how, I don't even know if you've answered that yet, maybe you did, how difficult or, you know, it can't be easy to do, but how often, let's say in the time that you've been an educator, how often do, you know, do those type of things like occur or, you know, is it regular? Is it sporadic? I'm just trying to see what type of environment that makes for when people hear, when our youth hear, you know, I can't imagine you being in your home planning to, throw a drink on someone, drunk or whether you're drunk or whatever, throw it, and they said she was, I don't know, but to throw a drink, of course she deleted the tweet when Sean King was sent the video, you know, because that put another whole, dimension to it. But it's amazing how people do those type of things and then they are apologetic or they get embarrassed after the fact. But I just wonder how, you know, how kids are insulated from that and how they can whether it's easy for them to kind of put it aside when they're around, you know, when they're in school or around other kids. It's just kind of hard for me to see, and maybe I'm wrong, just that it would be that easy for them to just leave that at home and not bring it to school. You know, do they even have a capability of doing that, leaving it at home and not bringing it to school with them?
I don't think they do because, again, they're impressionable. You know, everything that we teach them, if they're sponge, they're absorbing it. And it's just the same thing as if I teach them something, they don't have the capability of leaving it at school. They take it with them. You know, sometimes it's like, well, my teacher said, you know, it's because they're sponge-like, and then they're seeing the world for the first time without rose-colored glasses by the time they get to me. So now they're starting to see things, and it's so much being thrown at them that they're really not understanding their true place in the world. So, for that question about how often does this happen, this is at minimum annually. This is annual. Like every year I have to have this conversation with either one student or I have to have it with one student per class because, you know, this is what they're hearing at home. This is how their parents are talking at home. These are things that their parents are saying. You know, they also, you know, they travel in groups. They travel in packs. And when they go out, it's not just, you know, it's a village. You know, it's a village it takes all of us to raise a child. So like you were saying about us having more impact, we do because we're with them in the waking hours. But also, I'm not just fighting their parents. I'm also sometimes fighting another teacher. I've had that situation where it's a teacher that says or does stereotypical things. I mean, you know, they're Trump supporters, And they say, well, they ought to not do this. They ought to learn how to comply. They need to do this. They need to do that. And then they bring that to my class. Well, Mr. Such and Such said. So then I have to battle with both parents and educator. So now I'm battling two fights. And I have to try to teach them why.
So is there anything, you know, I'm just one of those kind of people that always, you know, maybe it's just a pipe dream, but I'm always looking for solutions. You know, there are a lot of problems in our culture, in our community, and this is certainly someone throwing a drink on someone who has paid the same amount of money to be there as they did. That's not one of the things that's our problem. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times when things happen to us, you know, we kind of try to peel back the layers and try to see what is our part in this. And again, we're victimized over and over again, even with the deeds of others, and then the victimization we do to ourselves after we try to think it out, because most of these times there are no real solutions. What would you say, or what would you have to offer to say this particular situation? And what have you all done? Have you, as an educator, ever spoken to a parent about this kind of situation? And what has been the feedback from the parent?
You know, I have spoken to parents about this situation. I've spoken to one just as recently as a few weeks ago. I've spoken to previous educators that may look like me and have had this student and say, how did you let this go on? And then I get them, and I have to be the one that says, you can't do this. You can't say this. Honestly, like, if I was just to give my honest opinion, I really don't believe that there's a solution to it. And the reason why I don't believe that there's a solution is because we teach kids, oh, we're going to put you in a diverse setting. We're going to put you in class with, you know, all these different ethnicities. And we're going to do cultural sensitivity. You need to be sensitive to other people's culture. Well, the problem with that is, as much impact as I have as a teacher, I only have them with me for 50 minutes. Now, when they go over to my coworker's class, that person may not be teaching cultural sensitivity. They may not care about it. They may be a part of the majority, and they feel like it's not necessary. So then we have a balance of issues. And the kids get confused, and what happens when a child gets confused? They give up. So they just go to what's easier. So what's easier? The easiest thing to do is just to do what I was doing before. But it's just certain kids that you can just really, like, talk to and have an impact on them. And I may get one or two, but I can't guarantee that I'm going to get, you know, 20 throughout the year, because there is a balance in that, and I'm battling so many different elements, home and school.
Yeah. Well, I have been talking to advocates, and especially, you know, African-American advocates, as well as persons of color advocates. And this was one thing that a lady kind of spelled out to me as one of the things that parents can do, or people can do, or that we all can do in terms of helping to solve this problem, to not raise children who are biased. One of the first things she wrote is that some of the things that she says they should not do. We say one thing but do another. Example, we tell them not to judge a book by its cover, and then we do it. We blurt out offenses during tense moments. We whitewash history. We promote respectability in politics. We stay silent during uncomfortable moments. She said that raising children is hard. Raising them to be socially conscious is even harder. Admitting that we're part of the problem is probably the hardest thing we can do. So there are groups out there now, people who are understanding that there's a problem with this. Of course, those type of groups, there are always few. And so, it you know, they don't really reach the masses in the time that we need to to reach. Ending this podcast, ending this interview, would you agree with some of those? Is there something you would add? And if so, how could we get this kind of information across to, the masses, where this information, you know, needs to go? She looked at this as sort of a solution of sorts. Or is that something that teachers can really deal with in terms of solutions, since you are dealing with children about 50 minutes per day in each class? Is it worth it? I mean, is there something that can be done? Is it even worth it? Or do we just leave the children to the parents who would rather throw a drink on someone who's exercising their constitutional rights to kneel during the Pledge of Allegiance?
No, I definitely believe it. I'm a firm believer in you sowing the seed. So you never give up on the task. You plant the seed, I'm sorry. You plant the seed, and God does the increasing. He
right.
may not want the kid to know right now. It may be something that he wants them to see in 5 years, and then they reflect back on that moment when their teacher said something to them. So, no, I agree with all of those methods. But one of the things that was mentioned was, you know, being that example. Now, all this stuff goes a lot deeper than what we can see with the eye. And
right.
part of that is, you know, we got to think about where our generation is now. And this isn't even a race thing. If we look at our kids, a lot of our kids are raising kids.
Yeah.
At 16 years old, were you socially conscious as you are now? Were you socially conscious as you were at 35 when you probably should have been having, you know, maybe your second child, but you had your first child at 16. So
yeah.
you're not even able to, you know, think about how to pay a bill correctly. And, you know, we're trying to ask you to do certain things. So the only thing we can do is put that in front of you and say, hey, you know what, you need to be aware of this. You need to be aware of these things and how to operate in these systems. And we need to, as teachers, I feel like, or as educators, we need to lead by example. When we get upset, like she said, you know, don't yell out certain things. Don't be judgmental. Because, I mean, it's hard. It's very hard, you know, especially being a woman of color. I'm hearing kids say things. And they're saying stuff that's stereotypical. And they're saying things that they see on the news. Well, why does the news show this? And, I mean, they bring me things like articles. Well, look, do you see this? Why do they loot? Why are your people looting? And I have to refrain and remain calm and say, you know, let me show you the other thing. Now, you see this part, let me show you this part. When naturally, there are some days that I'm just on a defense, and I just want to say, well, what about show people? But I can't do that because then
right.
it becomes tit for tat, and I have to lead and say, well, then what you see right here, you see 2%. Let me show you the 98%.
Right.
So
absolutely.
I have to just be on that, you know, I have to be able to just block those things out and just keep putting things in front of them that they need to see. I try to make sure that my kids in my classroom, that they're not just learning the subject and the content, but they're also learning the world itself. And I'm trying to keep them abreast of what's going on. I keep current articles in front of them because I know they're not seeing it at home. So
right.
when that goes back to that parent that's throwing the drink, maybe they see that parent throw the drink on the person who decides to kneel and protest for racial injustice. Maybe they see their parent, but if sometimes you have that situation where their kid says, Mom, you were wrong.
Right.
You shouldn't do that. And
okay.
that comes from them being around someone, maybe someone that they have admiration for, maybe someone that
right.
they respect because how they handled it.
Right. Well, according to you, it sounds like we can, and when we implement a few certain tactics, we can raise children, certainly raise children who are not biased. I want to thank you so much for your input. Thank you so much, Charlie Glover, educator with Houston Independent School District. Your input is much appreciated. This concludes our third podcast for Fannie Lou's Children. Thanks again.
Thank you.